Jamerzine, how you doing?
How are you doing?
Pretty good. How are you feeling today?
I'm all right, thank you very much. Not bad.
Hey, I heard Bolo last week, man. I am floored. Oh. your chord progression is outstanding on that.
Ah, thank you very much.
So, see, I'm a guitarist, but I'm from the Shredder school, you know, so I grew up with like Steve Vai and Eddie Van Halen and all that, but yeah. What turned me on to jazz was Stanley Jordan.
Oh,
you know, like I heard I'm sure you've heard his version of Eleanor Rigby and Stairway to Heaven, yeah. And then it just started me researching that, and then when, you know, like 20 years later, when Natasha sends me this, I mean, like, I was amazed. I even was in love with your tone.
All right, cool. Yeah.
You know, so, I mean, yeah. So I you can ask Natasha this. I actually said, yeah, I need to talk with this guy. I need to get him. I mean, it's great. You know,
nice.
Because you're so original in the way you play. I mean, it's, you know, you have a flow to what you're doing.
Yeah. I try and, this new album and that track is born out of a need for myself to just try and turn everything around that I've been doing before and finding a new way of setting about things, a new sounds to use, and the harmony and melody and that from before, usually writing some a chord sequence and then adding a melody on top. But this time around, I thought, no, I'm going to start with melody and then from that melody, see what harmony comes out of it. But also using as much of the non-diatonic scales, you know, those seven note scales, just using all of the 12 tones of that chromatic scale and making sure that you get every note is equal in strength then, and it moves away from kind of conventional thought processes, I guess.
Oh yeah, yeah. I mean, what do you find it harder to compose that way than as the traditional way, where you know you basically build a song from the ground up?
Yeah, it was. I wanted a new challenge in everything, and when I set, and I've always been really into harmony and tonality and bending it and stretching it as much as possible. But I just got to a point where I just found myself doing the same things over and over again, and I just thought, right, I'm going to flip this all the way around and put myself into a bit of an uncomfortable situation. And I started doing it, and of course it just became a bit more comfortable playing with those sounds, and then hearing new relationships all the time between note to note. And then out of that, the chords are just what they are. They came out of like a phrase of like nine notes. I then looked at that group of nine notes and thought, what chord could this be? And then stack them up afterwards, and of course, because there's like six or seven more notes in a phrase, it just offers so many different chord variations. It's like, whoa, okay. So it's basically almost free in a way.
Nice. Now I've got to ask you a question as a guitarist myself. Like I said before, you know, I come from the Shredder school, so I'm more like, you know, like I said, the Eddie Van Halen, Steve Vai, Paul Gilbert type. But yeah. I got into jazz in the early 90s because they started mentioning jazz players, you know, you know, like Stanley and, you know, and Pat Metheny and so on and so forth. And so I got into that. But as a rock guitarist myself, my question to you is, do you find jazz less constricting?
No. I find it really free. I don't find any restrictions on it at all within the music. I think sometimes people expect it to be more restricted, I suppose. But actually, I found it just means you can do, you're free to do what you want. And when I play with various players and different bands and that, I always try and encourage, and we always try and encourage, I suppose I've been lucky in that way that I've played with a lot of similar mindsets, that we always encourage ourselves to just go and play, and there is no restrictions and wrong notes. There is wrong notes, but it doesn't really matter when you're playing, because that wrong note can then lead you off into something else. And it keeps you on your toes, and it's always where's this going to go, rather than, ooh, what's happened there?
Exactly. Exactly. Because I mean, it wasn't until I discovered jazz that I started thinking that rock was maybe a little too constricting, because, you know, you're stuck at, you know, a lot of times if you want to stay popular, you're stuck in 4-4 you know, and then, you know, there's a lot of pentatonic scales. And you're kind of maligned, you know, more to the genre than you would be with jazz. And with jazz, it seems like, you know, like the exploration of music.
Yeah, and I think that it allows you to do what you want to do, and like you just mentioned there, that you can get controlled by the style, and then by being that, you get controlled by the people who listen to that style and kind of write about it. And with jazz music and I suppose classical music as well, it allows you as the individual artist and as the individual person to express yourself exactly how you want, and you can bring all those influences in as well. It allows you to improvise in any, that's how I see it allows you to use any style that you want to use to improvise how you feel and create something that you want to say at that particular point in time. And then I suppose the challenge with the composition is to enable you to have a framework to express yourself at any given point in time, but maintaining a focus within that track, if you follow.
Yeah. Oh yeah, totally. Cool. Now as a guitarist, I have to ask you the question that's always in the back of every guitarist's mind or any musician's mind. What's your gear? Because I saw on Bolo, you've got this awesome semi-hollow guitar, you know. Yeah. And I mean, I saw that you're playing through a Mesa Boogie, which I did not know jazz players gravitated to Mesas, because I'm you know, because I think, okay, tri rectifier, you know what I'm saying? I mean, but you've got a really good tone. You've got almost a stratty bell tone, but it's muted enough to where it almost sounds like you've got nylon strings. I mean, it's a really interesting tone. So, so what's your gear?
Okay, I've got that guitar is an Eastman. What is it? Let me have a look. I've got it here with me.
It's expensive, is what it is. It looks like
it's an Eastman T184MX, and it's new to me. Well, as about a year ago, I got it, so it's still relatively new. The guitar I used before that was a Westone Session 2, and I played that for 21 years, and I needed to find a new one because it was just getting old, and plus, why not get a new one? I had some money. So I got the Eastman. I got the Eastman last year, and it is just a ridiculously rich sound within it. It's got a nice little thing where, you know, you don't have to bend the guitar neck too much, but you can get a really nice subtle vibrato from the neck bend thing. Just like really cool. And then from the guitar, I then go into this, I've got a tube preamp made by Carlos Swan, a German amp maker. And it's just, that's my favorite bit of amplification that I've got. It's so nice. And from there, I run into my Mesa Boogie F50.
Nice. You know, Eastman, they're a boutique company, right? I mean, they're like handmade.
Yeah, yes, they are. And I got a good deal at the shop, that's for sure. But it was a moment that I'm sure we've all been through the guitar. You walk in the guitar shop, and it's just that one that's kind of glowing at you.
Yeah, from across the room.
Yeah, you know. Oh, yeah. It's made eyes at you, and your eyes are like, they can't go anywhere else. So that was a case of that.
But, yeah, I mean, that guitar you have, you know, the Eastman is gorgeous. I mean, the first thing I thought was, because, like, you know, the first thing I start doing is, like, I start trying to see where the headstock is, you know, says, so that I can see who makes it. But it reminds me of a scaled down custom Gibson.
Yeah.
You know, like, but when, you know, how on some models they'll shorten the body a little bit.
Yeah. The 335, I found those a bit too big, that body size. And so this is, I can't remember what the length is. It's much more a size of a 339, I guess. But just a smaller length of body scale, and it just fits in with my body real nice. And it's just a really good size.
No, is it a set neck or?
I think so. Let's have a little look.
Oh, you've got it?
Oh, yeah, it's there. Let's have a little look here. Let's have a look. No, I think it's... Nope, there it is. It's like a... Yeah, it's inserted in, so you get blocked on.
Oh, okay. So, yeah, it's a block glued neck then.
Mm.
And then, is it the stock pickups? Are you playing Duncan's or something? Or
No, the stock pickups are in there at the minute. I'm thinking I might try, but I might try moving on to something else, but I'm really not sure because I'm still only relatively new and still getting used to the new sound of it. So I don't know. The endless quest for pure perfect tone. And
that's one of those things like you don't want to mess with if the guitar sounds good now. You know, because I mean, even when you put them back in there, it's not going to sound the same.
No, nope.
You know. So, well, let's talk about how you got started. I mean, how did you gravitate to your music, and how did you learn the guitar?
Well, I started music's been in my family. My dad was a music teacher. He's a bit of conductor and a composer and all that. So, music's been around our family ever since I appeared and started. Playing at primary school, you know, at 4 years of age, recorder and thing. And then gradually I headed towards the violin and then the viola appeared. And then it was when I was at music college and I was doing orchestral studies at the time. But when I hit music college, that's when I kind of thought, well, hold on, the whole musical world opened up. I was no longer being taught as such, no longer being guided by a tutor. And I noticed that there was electric guitars being played at the music college, which I wasn't aware of before I went there. And so I had electric guitar. I had a bit of a dabble at 16 years of age in my first band and that, but it wasn't really, it was just something I did alongside. But then when I went away to music college, it was like, I can be whatever now. And the guitar offered me much more creative scope than the viola did. Because I love orchestral music, but you were sat there, you were playing what you were told. And so the opposite contrast happened with me outside of that time in college. And so the guitar enabled me to be a creator. And from that, it was listening. Before I got to music college, I was listening to the Black Crowes and Aerosmith. And I love the Black Crowes, still do. And but out of that, being around the other musicians, they helped me to find new guitarists and new jazz players, such as Pat Metheny was huge at that time, and John Scofield and Keith Jarrett and Bill Evans as well, pianists. I really like how they get the chord tones going on their instruments. But that's how I became, that's how I got into this world of, I suppose, jazz and composition and arrangement. It's through the contrast of orchestral guided directed music and then the freedom of creating your own music.
Now, do you find it harder to be a touring musician in the jazz world than in any other type of music? Because I've always seen, you know, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but I've always seen jazz as like eternally underground.
Yeah. It's, I can't remember who said it. I think there was a sax player way back when, 60s, 50s, said, like, it's not the direct quote here, but something along the lines of, if you play to seven people in your crowd, you've sold out, kind of thing. And it's still a little bit like that. I mean, some days you play to a lot and some days it's quite small, but whatever there is, it's always a really good vibe. And it has that underground sound to it, that feel to it, because you're part of something and your audience wants to be part of that with you, because it's a bit of a sharing thing.
It seems like more of an experience than an actual show sometimes.
Yeah, you kind of drift in and drift out of it. And I like to get that across when we play. I like to play non-conventional jazz settings as well, you know, more like pubs and bars rather than jazz clubs and that, because sometimes you can find those audiences, they can be a little bit, they're expectant, they know exactly what they want to hear in those situations, whereas in general pubs and bars, they kind of walk in, don't really expect it, and then you go, oh, actually quite like this, oh, cool. You know, and then they're getting off on it, you know.
Yeah, and then you get some new converts.
Yeah.
So, well, explain your band, like, what's your live show like?
We usually go out as a trio, guitar, bass and drums, and then on top of that, occasionally we'll put in a couple of horns. And that's one of the reasons of making the album what it is, with the two kits and the four horns, is it was just kind of a combination of all the different people that I've played with over the last 2 years or so. And so I kind of written for them. So the live show, it changes each time, really, depending on where the gig is and what the kind of venue is. So always trying to keep that changing as well. We've had a regular, the regular trio. That's, I like to work with that, because it allows us to get nice and gritty, and it allows us to, you know, keep with our initial rock roots.
Yeah, because it'll have like a, you know, more of a power trio feel.
Yeah,
and then
yeah,
you could get, you'd have more space to move around too.
Yeah.
So now, you've played all over the world, like, you know, United Kingdom, obviously, but also Cuba and Mexico and so on and so forth. How what are the audiences like in the UK versus, you know, other countries? I mean, like, is it a culture shock at times, or?
Not really. The audiences, whenever I've been abroad, I've always felt that they've been much more accommodating and welcoming and wanting to listen to what you've got to do. When I was in the States, for instance, that was really, really apparent. Let's have a listen to what you've got. And it seems that they don't come in, even in Mexico and Cuba, exactly the same type of attitude. Let's have a listen to what you've got. And rather than it being the other way around, I think that in the UK, we have a tendency to have a pre-expectancy, if that's the right word, of what we want to get out of going to see a gig as an audience, rather than what are we going to listen to, if you follow. So
oh yeah, exactly. Now jazz was basically born in the United States, roughly 100 years ago, out of I would say blues, show songs, yeah, and old slavery songs or old slave songs, and so it's, you know, considered, you know, by historians to be the people's music. Do you get that when you play here?
I do. I've had that feeling that it's a shared, like you said earlier, it's a shared experience, and you're part of that. And I know that maybe on some of the new stuff that it might not sound like it is part of that heritage, but I am fully aware of the heritage, and I try and keep that within the whole album as a whole. Maybe there's some tracks where I'll go a little bit more, I suppose, inside thoughtfulness, you know. But I always try and keep that spirit of it's people together and sharing, and we as a band need to share, and therefore if we share, then the audience will be part of that experience. And I always try and include that ethos and that principle in it, because I am aware of where it's come from, and without it I wouldn't be able to do what I do.
Yeah, and another thing too is, depending on where you're at over here, depends on the type of jazz. Like Chicago, Chicago has its own jazz, and then you've got Creole jazz if you're down in New Orleans, and then I don't know, I've got my own name for it, but I'm thinking of like the piano intimate jazz, like at the clubs in New York. Places like that. So if you could, you know, having said all that, if you could plant your trio in any one of those situations, which would it be and why?
Well, I like Chicago a lot. I like, when I've been over there, that's got a good vibe about it. I think that would fit with us quite well, that old blues heritage, the rhythm and the blues heritage and that area. Quite like the idea of Chicago a lot.
Nice, because you know what's funny, you can go, you know, around here in Chicago, because that's where we're at here, and you can see, I mean, they've got buskers that you know, that are jazz guitarists that, I mean, like, just blow a lot of people away that I know, you know, and I mean, and they're just out there, and they're not even really doing it for the money. They're just doing it, you know, to be heard, and it, you know, you know, and it's such a great, great experience. I mean, would you, you know, would you put yourself in a situation like that with your trio for ensemble?
I think so. Yeah. I would. Well, yeah, I'd say yeah. whether the other lads had come with me or not, that's a different thing. But we definitely just put it, just playing it. Yeah,
yeah. It really depends on what part of town you're in, though. I got to be honest. I mean, like, there's a few streets I would not bring the Eastman. You know,
yeah.
So, you know, because you'll find out how much that's worth in crack real quick. But you know, but well, let's talk about your new album. How's that coming along? And you know, who have you got, you know, on it? And you know, what's the vibe like so far?
Well, it's an eight track album, and there are. Let me get this right now. There's eight of us playing, eight musicians. There's myself. There's my brother on drums, and there is a lad called Ben McCabe who's also on drums. We got Alan Whittam on the bass guitar. He plays a bit of double bass on a couple as well. And then we've got the horn section, which is Matt Robinson. He plays bass, clarinet, and clarinet on a track. There's Nicky Madden, who plays baritone sax. And then we've got two trumpets, Joseph Ward and Nathan Bray. Nathan plays in, he's a London West End session guy. And I'd play some duo gigs with him around in a nice little duo setting, completely different from what the album is and what he usually does for a day job. Joe Wardy plays around Manchester. He plays in all sorts of little different things. Nicky, baritone again, he plays with all sorts of different styles as well. He's been playing with a band called I Am Clute from Manchester. He's been touring Europe and places. Matt Robinson is just, well, cool. He runs jazz things up in Lancaster up north. And again, he's in all sorts of different things. And Ben, Alan, and Richard, with Richard being my brother, this might be a bit obvious, but we've done things together for a number of years in the world of jazz and things like that. So, yeah, it's nice to have a large group of all different people.
Well, it sounds like it's going to be pretty diverse too.
Yeah, it is, and I'm well up for that. I always like to try and shift it around and use as many different things as possible. And between the frame, it starts with a bit of a Euro, European folk type tunes, the first two, and then it cuts to a gospel, spiritual, horn only ballad type of tune. And then it goes to a duet with me and the bass clarinet. And then Bolo appears in the middle, and then it comes back out with a blues bass tune, and then it finishes with a bit of a swing funk and then a Latin funk thing to finish it off. So it shifts quite quickly from one track to the next of different style and diversity. So it's quite
so it's like a journey affair. It's a journey.
Nice.
Now, if you could take one track off of the album and throw the rest away, which would it be and why?
This is where I say it's like those old concept albums. It's just one continuous track.
Okay, that's the safe answer.
Yeah.
It's like picking your favorite kid, isn't it?
Yeah. I think actually, weirdly, it's the gospel spiritual ballad where I don't actually play on it, and it's just the writing. Because I get to, when I was recording it and then when we were like mixing it and that, I got to sit back a little bit more and listen to the music rather than listening to my part within a little bit more, I guess. And I'm listening to the way that the improvisation section worked out, which I was really pleased with, I knew my idea would work. Yes. that was really nice to have that. To nice. Listen to that. So, nice. Yeah.
Now, when is it coming out?
It's due for September 7th.
Nice. And I mean, where are we gonna see you promoting it and every, you know, coming out here?
Well, I need to work on that. There's nothing in the pipeline as yet, but I need to, and I'd love to sort something out as soon as possible. So
yeah, because you just got done playing some festivals, didn't you?
We did a couple this summer, mainly with the trio. Though the larger group thing is a little bit more difficult to get. To get people to come and take it, but hopefully with it coming out very soon, I can actually say, "Look, there it is! Boom, take it," and then get us on.
Nice. Now I gotta ask you the obligatory question, because you share a name with another Neil Young. Now, have you ever like sent that guy a cease and desist, like quit using my name or anything?
Well, no, I haven't, but. Years ago, his promoter or his agent did have sir. It was like by. It wasn't direct to me. It was sent to a promoter in where was it? I can't remember what it was now. A European jazz festival. It was a number of years back now, and I was in contact with this promoter about going over and doing some shows and that. And then it was all about three or four email contacts. It was all working nice, and then all of a sudden he sent me a copy of an email that was from. Neil Young's promoter, and it basically said to the promoter, "I don't know who this guy is, don't know where this has come from, I wouldn't trust it at all, this is just not right, and as you know, Neil is not touring Europe this summer, blah 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 blah, I'd ignore it, I wouldn't trust it." And then at the end of it, he just said, "But I have got Todd Rundgren," or whoever it was that's on his books. So he, instead of like,
oh, so he actually thought you were the, you know, you were being that he was being billed.
Yeah, he thought that I was in, trying to use. I imagine he thought that I was an imposter, trying to get. I just said to the guy, "Well, it's my name, and I'm playing jazz. What's this all about?" You know. So
you guys go out and play his songs then, like screw him.
Yeah.
Get the Bigsby out and the Bigsby Bridge and everything, and just go to town.
screech my head off. Yeah, turn the volume up.
Man, but
so no, that was a bit crap.
Well, because I was gonna say, you know, like he said, if he was gonna send you a cease and desist, man, you could just have your lawyer fire back that he needs to sue your parents for naming you. You know,
I know.
So
I have mentioned it to my mum and dad, and yeah, to be fair to him, it wasn't that. Prime of 19, whenever it was, 70s, so, you know, no wonder they thought the name sounded all right.
Just kind of makes him sound like a pompous ass.
Yeah, a bit.
You know, like, you know, I'm the only Neil Young, you know, that'd be like the first John Smith, be like, what the, you know, who's...
Yeah.
I mean, because they're common names, Neil and Young are common names. Yeah, yeah. So
there's a footballer. There was a footballer in the 70s who played for Manchester City called Neil Young. There was another footballer in, I think, played for Bournemouth, I think. But yeah, there's loads of them, and there's loads of us. There's a singer-songwriter in, is it Idaho, I think, as well, called Neil Young. And I think he's actually got Neil C. Young as well, so that's quite funny.
Oh, wow. You guys could all, if you know where the real, you know, or not the real, but the original Neil Young is, you can all, like, gang up on him.
Yeah, pounding with our stuff.
yeah, exactly, man. I don't think his guitar playing would change much. You know, if he broke his hand or something, but you know,
that's true.
Yeah, so you know what's going to happen? He's gonna hear this and he's gonna sue me now. So, and then he'll tour with you then.
Yeah, we are Neil Young.
Yeah, we got to stick together, Neil. Yeah. So Neil, where can we find you online?
The website is neilcyoungtrio.com. I've got a Twitter, which is @neilcyoung, and there is a Facebook as well, Neil C. Young or Neil C. Young Trio, I think.
Exactly. Yeah, and there, I mean, you get all the up to dates and stuff, and the out, like you said, the album comes out in September. It's going to be on iTunes and everything. And
yeah, you can come if you come if. Go direct through the website for the purchase. There's there is a four track trio EP on there as well, which is going to be given as a bonus CD, which is just purely trio,
which is something the other Neil would never do. So, you know, so it'd get pirated, but he'll never do it.
So, yeah, well, if he's not going to share his name, he's not going to share a CD.
Oh yeah, exactly. Yeah, because that would be sharing. You know, I wonder who got all the Legos in that preschool class. thanks for being on the show, Neil. I really appreciate it. I love your music. I love your guitar sound, and you're actually inspiring me to want to learn how to play, you know, more like you. I mean, because you've got such a style. You've got a pristine, fluid style. And it's great and it's catchy. And, you know, like I said, as a rock guitarist myself who's dabbled in jazz, you make me want to learn more about jazz.
Oh, cool. Two kind words.
We'll see how it sounds like on a Strat.
Yeah, cool, man. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Well, thank you, man.